Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Zivi Owens, and I am the host of this podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I am also a newly minted USA Today bestselling author of the novel Blank. I've created a whole community of book lovers around this podcast, a publishing company, reading retreats, a bookstore, and more. Learn more at zivimedia.com or follow me on social at Zivi Owens or join the community at Zivi Readers. James Ree is the author of Red Helicopter, A Parable for Our Times, Lead Change with Kindness Plus a Little Math. James Ree is a high school teacher and Harvard Law School graduate turned private equity investor and CEO. James's leadership story first grabbed global attention during his unlikely 7-year tenure as chairman and first-time CEO of Ashley Stewart, after his radical and yet intuitive approach fueled a transcendent, unprecedented reinvention story for the company, James concretized his leadership philosophy and operating system, kindness plus a little math, in the form of Red Helicopter, his media education platform. Ree teaches at Howard University, where he serves as the Johnson Chair of Entrepreneurship, MIT Sloan School of Management, and Duke Law School. His TED Talk and Dare to Lead interview with Brené Brown have captured the imagination of millions. He composes systems that bridge people's industries and ideas. He is the author of Red Helicopter and lives outside of Boston, Massachusetts.
Welcome, James. Thanks so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Red Helicopter, Lead Change with Kindness Plus a Little Math.
Thanks for having me. It's nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you too. What a powerful book you wrote. I mean, it's a unique hybrid of sort of the businessy side of stuff, but mostly the emotional side, which of course is the point, right, that we have to bring it all together. Can you tell listeners what the book is really about and how, you know, when you decided to write it, which of course you write about in the book?
Yeah, I think the book at its core, it's about a son and his relationship with his parents, especially his mom, mm-hmm. and really understanding the gift that his mother gave him regarding agency and him not really fully understanding that gift for a long time. And then it was how a group of women, most of whom were Black women, who really unexpectedly gave him the gift of understanding that agency through his relationship with them and realizing that I had the opportunity to do, I think, better job, the wrong word, just to really appreciate it in my 40s about some things maybe I missed when I was younger and how the parallels between these women and my mom. I think lastly, it all plays out, you know, funny enough, in a business story. And so while I'm unlearning and relearning, I get the opportunity to expose a group of readers who might not generally get exposed to private equity or finance and make it accessible to them and also affirm them and say some of the things that might be troubling you in your lives. Some of them are not of your own doing, that there are certain systems around that if you understood them better and we helped name them for you, you would realize that what you're doing in life is quite extraordinary. I think that's sort of the book. It's those three woven together. And yeah, I think that's what it is at its core. And that's why I couldn't think of a better name for the book, because it has all of these things. And it's I was reading about your bookstore, about how you curate based on emotion, which is brilliant. And it's really trying to marry emotion. We are emotional. I mean, human beings are. And I think a lot of times in our culture, particularly in the US, we think of emotion as weak or not natural, but physiologically, that's just not true. So
yes,
it's embracing that.
Especially in the workplace. Someone I worked with yesterday forwarded me a whole thing about you and was like, this sounds like what you do, that like it's okay to be kind and nice, because like in every job description we post, it's like nice people only, you know, like I don't have time. You know? And I was like, no, I'm interviewing him tomorrow. And she's like, of course you are. But it's so important and not discussed enough, right? Like bringing our whole selves to what we do. And the scene in your book where the women who were the store managers for Ashley Stewart, who came to your father's wake, that was, and you were sobbing. I mean, I was like, oh my gosh, don't cry. I don't have time to cry. But so moving, right? That like, they were like, of course we're going to show up for you, because we're people and we show up for you and you show up for us.
And I got so accustomed to not expecting that. And that's part of the sadness in the story, is that I grew up, that was normal. I think most of us do as kids. You should do that. And investment of time and heart, there's nothing more valuable, nothing that lasts longer. And I don't know about your listeners, but I'll just say, to me, I had a hard time. I forgot that a lot in some of the workplaces that I worked in. It's and particularly being a guy, I think that there's that strain too, which I talk to a lot of mothers these days about their sons, them. Sons getting worried about we worry we will lose that side of the son. So, yeah. And then they reminded me, they said, of course we're going to come and hug your mother and hug you. And like, why didn't you ask anyone for help? Why didn't you tell anyone? And I think I wrote in the book, that was the last moment. I just said, all the armor at that point's off. Like, I just said, I don't want to live like this anymore.
Yeah. It's amazing. I was really struck. I have four kids, and the scene where your daughter Lila got into her accident at day camp, and how it was sort of, you know, not even just the people who were running the camp and the trustees and everything, nobody even talked to you, including people you had relationships with, and the fear and everything she went through. Can you just talk about that? And I know you said she's totally fine now, but everything's fine. Like,
totally fine. I mean, we got lucky. I mean, she should have died. And it was just a local day camp. We, you know, low expense structure. This was not a fancy camp. You know, and so she got hurt in a camp accident. She wasn't supposed to be doing what she was doing. Everyone knew it. And instead of helping the doctors figure out what exactly happened, everyone circled the wagons, right? So board protocol, this is what happens. The attorneys advise, you can't admit anything. And some of the board members I knew from just my business life in Boston, and I was a bit of a mentor to one of them. I just couldn't believe that he didn't call. And I get it too, right? We learn that there's a different way of living. Once you become a grown-up, there's a grown-up way of living. And particularly if you're in certain business worlds, there's certain rules where that trump the rules of humanity, right? That they're different rules. You have to play by these rules. And I think part of the book is just asking people to just pause and say, like, really? Like, is that really what you should be doing? But yeah, they didn't call. And I'm glad, because these younger board members, they had a catharsis themselves, right? Mm-hmm. They realized that they just sort of came to grips with their own cognitive dissonance and saying, I would never act like this. Like, why am I acting like this? And there's so many behavioral primes that are hidden and ingrained in our just norms and laws and systems and mores. And you know, I hope the book does a decent job just sort of showing that to a lot of people who, again, they tend to blame themselves. Mm-hmm. They don't know. And I'm saying, you know, if once we name them, is there an ability to maybe just adjust our behavior modestly? Yeah. If all of us do it modestly, it's like that scene in Finding Nemo when all the fish swim down. It's not asking for like 180 degree behavior change. It's maybe like, you know, can we 1% each, and then all of us do it. And I think some of the mores that we are for some reason having a hard time sort of just coming to grips about with some things that are kind of right and wrong. Like, I think maybe we start from there.
I mean, I think what you said to the former mentor when you said, what happened to you? I mean, first of all, that reflects so much on you. Like, to get in front of someone who's had who's responsible for something that happens to a child, and instead, like, turn it around. Like, what happened to you? Like, and I think that's really what you're asking readers too, right? What happens to us along the way, and can we stop? And, like, you know, let's all wake up. Which, you know, just to paraphrase again. Yeah,
my publisher Judith, I give her all the credit for coming up with the subtitle of A Parable for Our Times. Mm-hmm. After she had read it, she said, "It's a parable." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Exactly." I said, "Yes, it is a parable. It's a lot of interlocking stories. It's, in musical terms, I tried to write a fugue." Mm-hmm. It's like a lot of repeating circles and stories, like repeat and over again. And they just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And at the end, I try to tie it all together. But yeah, it's not a prescriptive book. It's hopefully it gives people permission to just reflect. And it's not telling people to do better or telling people to do something in this way. It's more like maybe you should trust what's instinctive inside. You know, you have it already. So what do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you also have a touch of the, you know, how the universe works and the things we don't know, you know, everything from, you know, I think that my parents are, they're here or feeling the spirits when they're not there. And like the numbers, like your 20, you know, twos and the hotel, you know, not the hotel, hospital mm-hmm. rooms, and happy almost birthday, by the way, all of that, that there's something bigger at play and that we have to be aware of that as well.
Yeah. I tried to, I think growing up, partly because I was all parents, but I think, you know, I was the first one born in this country for, in our family. I think there was a little bit of an extra emphasis on figuring it out, learning the system, assimilating, like it's really learning the rules. Mm-hmm. My parents really couldn't help me. And I think when you grow up like that, sometimes it creates a desire to over control. Mm-hmm. Over-prescribe, and that I have to do these things, these paths. And yeah, I don't know if I was particularly happy actually doing that. Mm-hmm. And during my 40s, which is the time period this book centers around, I realized again, it's like, you know, just not being in control and letting things be, serendipity is beautiful, and just letting things unfold. That agency actually entails surrender. And I couldn't say that 10 years ago. But now I can. Like, I'm like, I understand what that oxymoron means, that
yep,
you just have to let go. And yeah, let go with a soft hand on a little bit, but you have to let go and let it flow. So
I learned that this past decade also. Actually, my husband was switching careers, and I was like, okay, well, how are you going to get a job, you know, in entertainment? And he was like, you know, it's all just going to unfold organically. And I was like, no, it's not. Like, that's not, you know, I'm like, you know, this and the resume and the schools and da, 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 like, that's not how it works. And he's like, that's how it works for me. And I've kind of adopted that. And I'm like, you're right. Like, when it does, when you let it work like that, it actually can. And people are like,
look at the path that you've led. I was just, it's you, when you look on your website and all the things that you're involved with, you couldn't possibly have planned all that on day one.
No, I know. Thank you for researching that, by the way. That's really kind of you to do. You wrote really beautifully about your wife. I feel like she becomes a big character in the story, and, you know, everything from the beginning through to your in-laws to, you know, different things that she does at different times, and you're really just huge respect for her. How was she in the writing of this book? And were you, just talk about making someone you love into a character.
Yes. So I think, like other authors, I'm a first-time author, I underestimated how hard this process was. It was really hard. I think I publicly excoriated myself. I think it was on like Brené's podcast and saying, I don't think I can do this. But she tolerated my insecurities during a lot of this writing. My wife is the CEO of a cure Alzheimer's. So she is the scientist, like empiricist in our relationship. So it's funny, like in other relationships I have, I am the math rational person. In our relationship, I'm the creative. And I have that side of me, and it took me a long time to realize that. But yeah, I'm the creative that wears his heart on his sleeves and says, oh, I can't do this. I got to go play my guitar, and like, I can't write anymore. And she was very patient. And they were looking back, there were times I would not have been as patient with me as she was. So, and there were times she said it. She's like, you're annoying me right now. But she was just a real thought partner. She's a great writer. And I also wanted her to really read it from my children's perspective, too. Mm-hmm. To speak about my children, I wanted to make sure there was nothing in it that would be longitudinally like bad for them, embarrassing for them, that like daddy wouldn't embarrass them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's been a rock for me our entire life. I mean, it's I am my best self with her.
Oh, that's so nice.
I want to be that. Like, we all have not great parts of us. I want her to be proud of me. And that feeling, that sort of motivation, yeah, that's one of the few times I've had that in a relationship. And I was like, we should get married.
Yeah.
like, so.
Maybe I should keep this part going. This must be good.
Hard to find those people in your life, you know, that you really don't want to disappoint them. Mm-hmm. And you really want to be better. And the book is all about those people, right? It's about
yes, 100%.
All the people who made me better.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Sometimes we all have stuff we need to get off our chests. Even if we don't think it's interfering with our daily life, there are some things you just haven't processed, be it grief or trauma, eating disorders, anything. It might be time to work on those things, and I have a solution for you. Therapy. Online therapy by BetterHelp. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. I took the brief questionnaire online where there were, 20 questions. It didn't take long at all, maybe 3 minutes. And then I got matched with a therapist who could help me work on whatever. I picked trauma because even though it happened in 2001, I am somehow still not over the loss of my friend on 9/11. And it is what it is. BetterHelp is going to help. And I am so excited, especially because with my special code, instead of $80 a month, it is 10% off, $72 a month, which is so much less than traditional therapy. And you'll get a perfect therapist for you. There are 35,000 therapists to choose from, so you'll find the right one. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/momsdonthavetime today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. .com/momsdonthavetime.
Yep. I mean, when you talk about Ashley Stewart and going in and like, it's like a case study, right? I went to business school. It's like, what happens with this case? Like, where do you start? And why was it verging on bankruptcy? And then, you know, the chemicals in the back room and trying to like piece it all together. How did a company with a fan base, right? And a loyal audience get into this situation? When you were tying together this exploration, sort of the deep dive into the company, did you do that to also like parallel as you were diving deeper into yourself and you wanted to show the different strands? Just tell me about like, were there any pieces of this overlapping story that you thought were not essential or essential? Or I mean, there's a lot going on, but it all weaved together perfectly. But when you were thinking about it, I would imagine that would be a hard sort of outline at first to... Yeah.
It took me some time to really digest. I mean, some of this, like we were talking about sort of what the life that you've been leading, it was, I had to let go and allow, I mentioned fractal theory, just allow the chaos to unfold. Mm-hmm. Just the more I let it go and trusted more intuitively what was the matter, I learned more. It took me a while, and it took my mother's, unfortunately, death, and then many years of me mourning my mother to really write this book too. So some of these eurekas came while I was writing the book. I didn't really fully appreciate. I knew that the women reminded me of my mom while I was doing this. I knew that sort of as a finance business person, having lived through sort of like the standard capital markets, standard systems, there are better people than me to talk about this. But I knew that the systems didn't reward people who create positive externalities, which generally skew female, by the way, right? So I knew all of that. And I knew that one of the things that was holding this company back was all of those things and layer on race, right? That I knew. And I knew also that my mother tended to blame herself a lot for not knowing things or she feeling misfit or wrong when I would say, Mom, it's not you. Like, it's not easy being a Korean immigrant woman who doesn't speak English in this country. Look at all the things you've done. And that I knew. But it took after a while just that I think what really happened in a nutshell, it was a predominantly group of Black women who actually also reminded me and taught me about my Korean heritage. Mm-hmm. And that's an identity that for growing up and even throughout my adulthood, mostly it was been my Jewish friends who have reminded me of my Korean heritage. And it's always been that way for me on Long Island and, you know, in school and up in Boston, New York. But really, like this last linchpin in my 40s, it was Black women who really, they loved a lot of the Koreanness in me, actually. That part of it, that nuance, I didn't understand while I was doing all this. And then now I think I better understand what happened.
So interesting. I didn't realize in Korean culture that they said it takes about 3 years to mourn, that you should mourn your parents or mourn. Yeah, which I think should definitely be more widely adopted. I mean, grief in itself there is no timeline, but giving yourself that external permission to let it take a while and to, you took time off to figure out what to do in that period. And it's something that people should hold on to, right? That it's okay, that it's not going to happen in 2 minutes, that you can just take a week off of work and jump back in and everything's fine.
Yeah, one of the words that I think you would especially love in Korean is it's called maum. So in Korean, maum means literally heart and mind. So it's less like Aristotelian. There's not a distinction between the rational and the irrational and cognitive and emotional. So parents will ask you like maumdeuro, like what does your heart and mind tell you to do? Mm. And that weave and that sort of fluidity, a lot of that is less common, I think, taught or encouraged here. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that people are struggling with even now when people ask, what do you think of the economy? And people are not happy. And they're like, why? The numbers are so good. People are emotional. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's one of the things over the next 10, 15 years. I hope that our culture here is more realistic about just emotion.
Yes.
And it's powerful, right? I mean, it's really empathy, vulnerable, all of these things. And it's made me, I think, a better person, but even in my investment life or business life, I think I'm a better investor. By trusting intuition, we're at huge inflection points in our society, and some of the things that are about to come upon us are not, quote, rational. Mm-hmm. Like major changes that are happening, and some of that you have to sort of delve into imagination a little bit and say what's possible. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I bet when I visit your bookstore one day, I bet it feels maum.
Well, definitely visit the bookstore. We'll do an event. We should do an event for your book and, don't just pop in, but let me know.
I will.
That's amazing. When you're not, working on, where are you going after this? You're now a TEDx speaker. You have this fabulous new book. Like you can become this guru, right? With like guiding life's paths and thought leadership, blah, blah, blah. Is this what you want? There's so much time in the book where you spend trying to think of it. It's like so meta. You're thinking about what you want to do and, judging what you want and da da da. Like, Where do you want to go?
I love that question. I think for lots of my life, I was doing things not that I wanted to do, that it was sort of that I was supposed to do. And I kept struggling, right? I went and taught high school and then I did this I was fighting myself. Yeah, what I'm envisioning is this, and it's, I'll use less business talk and like business model, just more of a life. I want to put my life at precedent, like at a premium. So I'm living my life. It's the life I want to lead. It's the legacy I want to leave, not from a business standpoint, but my relationships. I want to really center my family, like real friends, make new friends. So I'm looking at the next 30 years of my life as if I were 22 again. So from 22 to 52, you know, like I was so awful at so many things at 22. And then by the time I was 52, hey, like pretty decent in a few things. So I'm doing things that I'm terrible at 52. Maybe when I'm 82, like I'll be pretty good at it. And so I want to live like that. I think I'll keep my brain fresh. And then the second thing, what Red Helicopter is, it's hard to describe. It is goodwill. It is Chung. It is this brand. Like I know how to build brands too as an investor.
Yep.
It's a brand and a physical object that I hope people will say all the things that I want for my children, all the things that could be slightly better. Maybe it's too complicated to talk about and people are having a hard time speaking right now, but if they see a red helicopter, we can be that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a branded philosophy almost,
mm-hmm. Yep.
A branded operating system. And so with an operating system, there's a community around it, and you know about building communities, and it creates new orthogonal like relationships. You know, I teach at Howard, MIT, and Duke. And it makes complete sense to me. You know, I have my friends are like, it's the United Colors of Benetton. And it's just, I live that life. And I'm asking people and saying, it's more typical than you think. Mm-hmm. Like, I see it. And so, why can't it be like this? And then, so it's a philosophy, it's a teaching system. I hope that a lot of people will want to read the book. And then, I really want to have permission from adults to speak to their children.
Mm.
I really hope that this is a book that adults read and say to a 17, 18, 19, 20, 25-year-old, something like that, and saying, you know, this is a good framework of a curriculum and a life. I don't want to speak to the kids without getting permission from their parents. That's the way I wrote the book.
Mm-hmm.
I think where Red Helicopter can go, you know, it's where it's going is that it's a curriculum about life, money, joy,
mm-hmm.
and about agency. Yeah. And then from an investment standpoint, a lot of the entrepreneurs, and I tend to overly, like the numbers are more women, they're more people of color or more first generation college.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to invest in them in every way. Not, it's sort of a network, opening doors, a guide if they need one, and money. But just because I don't give them money doesn't mean I can't invest the other three things. So that's what it is. It's like a branded world that has media, teaching, and part of my investment life too.
So great. I love
it. Does that make sense, kind of? Can you see it?
I can see it.
Yeah.
Like the blades of a helicopter.
Yeah. And it's,
yeah. I love it.
And I hope that, you know, it's been part of this whole process for me. It's been rediscovering my music. I think if I'd had more courage, I was born in 71, right? So I didn't know music and movies and like that was an option for me.
Mm.
I feel like one. But I think now, as I think about it, I misdefine what being a creative means. I thought it just tangibly meant you drew or you, but it's more of a frame of mind. And so that I sort of accepted. I'm like, I'm a creative, a little bit of a romantic, a dreamer, right? I like creating things with people and sort of making things a little bit better for people. That's sort of who I am. So yeah, I'm enjoying that side of it. So the music's been a really important part of me. Like this book is actually written. It's a musical.
Yes, you read that in the...
It's written in E flat major, actually. I remember meeting the Harper One team and saying, I think I would like to write a fugue in E flat major. And they very politely looked at me and said, it's structured as a musical piece and there's three movements. And and so we compose music and arrange music with it. We'll release it too. And so that's a lot of the projects I'm working on right now is, can I help people learn kindness and math together? And then the way to deliver it is through art. Because art forces you to use both sides. And it's making sense to me now. I'm like, this is why I have to convey it through music. And I'm commissioning some art pieces.
Hmm.
to draw what the music and the book are. So I hope it encourages young people to contribute their artwork or music and again, make some of the money stuff more accessible to some people who are frightened away from it because of the way that it's taught.
Mm-hmm.
Or the way that it's structured in our society now, I think we can do a better job making it more accessible. And it's not just, quote, dumbing it down. It's the way in which complex principles are taught. Mm-hmm. I think we can do a better job.
Okay. Well, it's really exciting and original and needed. So I'm a huge fan. Congratulations. And the book itself is really wonderful. And especially the relationship with parents and grief and appreciating where you come from and all of that. It's very poignant and moving. So
thank you. And I look forward to March 1st.
Oh.
Yeah, you have a big day coming up, right? You know, I don't have a podcast, but I would love to be helpful in any way that I can be.
Yeah.
And I'd love to meet you in person. And Santa Monica is awesome. Is that where you are?
I'm in New York. I'll be in LA tomorrow, but yeah.
And your name came up sort of serendipitously involving a organization for women writing.
Oh, okay.
UWN, Girls Write Now.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So sort of serendipitously, they came into my inbox through some probably mutual context but separate from this. And they mentioned you. And I was like, oh, I'm going to meet her today.
Oh, so there you go. Perfect.
Congratulations on all that. That's amazing.
Thank you. And really, honestly, thank you for even spending any time getting to know who I am. So that's really nice.
Okay, it was great meeting you. Bye. Thanks so much.
Great to meet you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you love it, please leave a review and follow us on social at Zibby Owens and at Zibby Readers.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.